The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Upgrade your tool storage for the new year with help from Menards. For heavy-duty storage that protects your tools, choose MasterForce. From shelving units to cabinets and so much more, you can keep your tools safe and within reach. Get versatile and durable storage from MasterForce today. Check out all our MasterForce storage in-store or check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at
I've been reading it by torchlight, so as not to wake the baby.
You're right, all right. I was like, do you need cash?
I just feel that, you know.
You just pay the meter.
Just thought it'd be a nice way to read it.
Yeah,
yeah.
This is the Women's Prize for Fiction Bookshelfy podcast, supported by Baileys. Join us in celebrating women's writing from around the world in the 30th anniversary year of the Women's Prize for Fiction, sharing our creativity, our voices, and our perspectives. I'm Vic Hope, and I am your host for Season 8 of Bookshelfy, the podcast that asks inspiring and brilliant women to share the five books by women that have shaped them and their lives. Join me and my incredible guests as we talk about the books you should be adding to your reading list.
Today, I'm joined by Rebecca Lucy Taylor. Rebecca is one of the UK's most exciting breakout, I'm going to actually say just best, musical stars of the past decade. Performing as Self-Esteem, she rose from cult favourite to mainstream hero following the huge success of her empowering, truth-telling 2021 single, I Do This All The Time. Her trademark lyricism and razor-sharp wit led to a Mercury Prize nomination for her second solo album, Prioritise Pleasure, and was crowned The Guardian and Sunday Times Culture's Album of the Year. Her latest album, A Complicated Woman, received the Visionary Award at the 2025 Ivor Novello Awards, praised for its fearless, genre-defying songwriting that is reshaping the sound and substance of modern pop. Her first book, also titled A Complicated Woman, which is sitting beside me, is a Sunday Times bestseller, taking readers on a poignant, witty journey using notes, lyrics, and observational prose that gets to the heart of being a woman in the world today. Welcome to the podcast. I'm sorry. Is it awkward?
No, I'm always like, who's that you're talking about?
Is you?
Yeah. Sunday Times bestseller. That's the first time someone said it back to me. That's very funny, isn't it?
And it's true.
I know. I mean, no one in the team thought that was going to happen. So no, it was never even talked about. And I was like, of course it's not. And then they said that. I think, I was like number 10 or something. But it don't matter because they can just say that. Yeah.
Yeah. I've been reading it by torchlight.
Oh.
So as not to wake the baby.
You're right, all right. I was like, do you need cash?
I just feel that, you know. You just
pay the meter.
Just thought it'd be a nice way to read it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of those, though. I've got my copy sitting next to me and basically every page is folded over because every time there's something that I relate to that I'm like, yes, I've felt that, I've been there, that speaks to me, it has to be made note of. And It turns out it's basically every page.
I know. I'm sorry to hear that for you, but yes.
It's fine. I mean, congratulations.
Thank you.
How did the experience of writing a book differ to songwriting?
I sort of did it so sporadically, and obviously quite a lot of it is brain to no iPhone, no interference. So sometimes I feel a bit bad saying write it when I wrote it. There's a central narrative that I did sit and write, and I've really loved it. Mainly, I mean, it's a basic answer, but doesn't have to rhyme, doesn't have to get to the chorus. Like, that was really fun. It's like complete control. Mm. And I did write it all with this, like, I'm not a writer, so this will, you know, nothing will ever happen. And then the fact that after Prioritized Pleasure came out, I got a book deal and I was like, I've got just the thing for you. And I'm really proud of how sort of weird it is and how non-linear and disparate it all is, because I feel like that's the sort of book I'd like to read. So yeah, it was easier and more freeing than writing songs. But now I reckon if I write another one, do you know what I mean? I think it's just that it was new. It's just a new form, so I enjoyed it. Like, if I start writing for a living, I'll be like, oh, it's so hard. I'm so tortured.
No, but having that balance alongside what you do, because you go on tour, you're doing a Complicated Woman tour, which I do have to say, my mum discharged herself from hospital to go and see in Newcastle.
Is she all right
she
now?
She survived.
She's survived. She got buried.
She's fine.
But I also think that is fair enough.
She said, music's the best medicine. We were all raging at her. The whole family on the group WhatsApp.
Where did she come to?
Newcastle.
Oh my God. That was a good one though.
No, it's worth
yeah.
it.
Oh, bless her. Did they look after her? Did she stand up?
she danced. She'll always find the strength to dance. But I was gutted because I had just given birth and couldn't come. And I was like, my mum's getting to go to this tour. And I'm not.
At least
mum
did.
What is this madness?
Yeah, yeah.
But to go on a book tour in the middle of a actual tour, you've got that balance. You've got both sort of happening in tandem.
Yeah.
Does that feel like you get to exercise all different parts of yourself?
It definitely has been, good for me. They help each other. Same with the acting stuff. Like when they all inform a sort of, maybe this is about my personality, but I'm always like, I'm ready to do the other one when I'm, you know. I love that the book has come out so close to the album and the shows, and it just means you have this like take home, more in-depth look at what I've just been trying to tell you anyway, which I think is like quite cool. But yeah, I've got another idea for something else. I've got another idea for an album. I've got, you know, I want to do those three disciplines just as and when I want to now would be the nice thing.
Yeah, just keep it moving.
Yeah.
I definitely feel that when you get bored of one, not bored, but you're ready to do something else. The fact that you've got all these different sides to yourself. And we've got to mention as well, I think the last time I saw you was in Cabaret in the West End. Yeah. There's also the acting.
Yeah, yeah. That's like, I've touched on it before. I really have to stop sitting on podcasts talking about it, but the music industry being in this sort of state that it's in and the unpredictability of it and the sort of relentless bad odds, I call it, like of working as hard as I do and maybe nothing happening. I actually spoke to like a music specialist therapist because I was like, what shall I do? And as I was talking about all these, you know, these other things I was doing, and he, you know, it was basically like diversify your craft. And I was like, oh yeah, I've done that. Right. Okay, great. So like accidentally alongside, just because I fancied it, and I'm sort of as a kid, I would have done anything. Like I stayed behind for every club,
yes.
No matter what it was. So yeah, I'm like really happy and proud and like really, you know, I don't know. It's like feels doable now for the rest of my life rather than like, holding out for some hit, which I'll obviously have the second I don't want it.
No, honestly, we could talk about this for hours. This is not the point of the podcast, but the current situation in the music industry, for anyone listening who isn't as familiar, you could write objectively the best song in the world ever and it might not chart, but you could get some AI to make 15 seconds of something like quite rubbish, but it does well on TikTok, you're number one. Mm-hmm. Like mm-hmm. you can't strategize around that. So you've got to do what you like.
Yeah.
Exactly. Do what you enjoy.
It's quite freeing. But I loved writing. And I was on Harry Hill's podcast the other day and I was talking about it and he said, well, it's just complete control, isn't it? And I was like, oh yeah. It is.
And do you feel like your reading life and your writing life feed each other, or do they sort of operate as different creative spaces?
They definitely feed each other. Like reading for me, it comes in and out. Like I'll be obsessed with it for a bit and then when I'm very busy, it's impossible. I don't know about how you, do you read?
Yeah.
Plenty.
Well,
like,
obviously. I do this.
Like, do you like books? do you like, right, of an evening.
Yeah.
Pre-baby. Would you sit on the sofa reading?
Yes. See, I'm finding it harder now, as I said, with the torchlight.
Yeah, yeah.
But it can be an escape or it can be a grounding.
Yeah,
it can go either way. Like sometimes you read, like I'm finding with your book, I'm reading it and I'm feeling seen. whereas sometimes I enjoy that I'm not feeling seen by reading, and that's great as well.
Exactly. I realise now it's, now things are slowing down for me. It's obviously just some sort of, you know, diagnosable thing, but I haven't been reading books and I can't get ideas. I don't want any ideas at the moment because I'm like, I can't go through the process of trying to realise anything.
So if you read a book, do you fear that an idea might come and then you won't be able to resist acting on it?
That's why I watch Love Island and, and like Married at First Sight. Because I'm
actually, I think you've just diagnosed a thing in me. I've just realised that's why I watch Love is Blind UK.
Because it's true relaxation.
It's true relaxation because there's nothing I need to do with my mind.
See, that, like, I talk about this a lot. And with my therapist was like, well, you know, you could knit. So I'm literally, I said to my current male lover, he was like, what do you want for Christmas? I was like, well, I'd like to start knitting. Do with that what you will. So we'll see. But yeah, it's just phone addiction and everything, isn't it, really? But reading is too inspiring for me. So I have to sort of stop doing it sometimes. But then, like on tour, there's so much downtime on tour where you can't go anywhere else. No one's going to ask you to do anything. I read more when I'm away and things like that. But if I'm in the house, I don't know why I can't read a book. It's a good podcast, come on.
Well, listen, we're going to talk about the books that have inspired you. I've looked through your list and they all seem to have had quite an impact on who you are, who you've become. Your first book, Shelfie book, is The Handmaid's Tale by Margaret Atwood. The Handmaid's Tale is an iconic dystopian novel set in the Republic of Gilead, a totalitarian theocracy that has overthrown the US government. The story follows Offred, a handmaid, one of the very few fertile women forced into sexual servitude to bear children for the ruling elite due to a widespread fertility crisis. The novel explores themes of oppression, reproductive rights, and female resistance as Offred navigates her restricted life whilst recalling her past and is widely recognised as a modern classic. When were you introduced to The Handmaid's Tale?
We did it at A-level, A-level English literature. So I always liked English and really got into it, but it was all a bit intimidating because it goes up such a level when you're doing it. And there was a smaller class and there was this new teacher and she was obviously like quite a feminist, which I'd not like encountered much actually. It sounds like I was born a million years ago, but really like in the early 2000s, we'd still not figured out like feminism as a general thing. And that teacher felt very excited about doing this. And page one, I was like, oh my God. Because my answer is very similar for a lot of these books, really. It was just anything that's led me closer to the realization of why I feel so frustrated and why life's felt so different for me from my brother or my, you know, the boys I've been in bands with and things like that. Like, I genuinely didn't realize it was any different. So this book is so, obviously, it's now sort of common, it's a sort of phrase, isn't it? People say my show is Handmaid's Tale. Like,
well, the aesthetic and the costume of the most recent show.
It wasn't like directly that, but I guess what I was referencing was sort of like pilgrim uniform that women would have to wear to sort of, and that's obviously what inspired Margaret Atwood. But it's so in our, I don't know, it's like in popular culture, it's just assumed that it's a representation of like oppression and, oh God, what's the word? Like having to behave. I reread it, you know, a few years ago and just can't believe it. 17, I was like, got the opportunity to read this and study it. Yeah. Like, and I had this teacher that was so, now I see with reflection, like she'd be a self-esteem fan. Do you know what I mean? Like, which I'm really grateful for. Cause like, it's amazing that sort of the torch paper was lit when I was sort of that young.
You described it in your notes as phase one of the penny dropping for you. And it's so true though, isn't it? There's that moment, that book where you've been studying books for however long and, you know, it's all academic. And then all of a sudden you go, oh my God, there's something that I actually care about.
Yes.
I actually care about something. And here it is on the pages of this book. Do you remember that those first feminist ideas in the book that really spoke to you at that age?
I think overall just the idea that the, like, dystopian future, right, that's always quite exciting and fun. And then, you know, I very viscerally imagine myself in that. And the fact that the book is right out the gate is a given that women, this is the role of women, no matter what. And there's no women in any other role than to try and just
do
this.
Pure yeah. subordinates.
And yeah, I remember just being like, oh, that is what would happen, isn't it? And then genuinely, I was that naive, I guess. But, and then the sort of the way they fight back, the way they are smart with fighting back, like the, I remember sort of, and the sisterhood of it. And then also, I was very young, 17. You know, I've always been quite sort of far behind in like life. So anything to do with, you know, they're basically being like sexually assaulted, and the horror of that, like that age, and now, you know, and now we know in the world how often that happens to us. Like it was like frightening, but revealing and good for a teenager to sort of, yeah, like rose-tinted glasses came off about the world. Yeah.
When you have that sort of awakening, it just, it is so deep-rooted that it can really pave the path for you going forward. So how did that awakening influence the very personal, often quite boundary-pushing themes that you explore in your own work?
Yeah, I think from then onwards, with in different degrees of like phase one of the, you know, I still, for a long time, I changed my behavior and I would please sort of the male gaze and things like that. But everything about self-esteem has been about admitting that and healing that. Mm. And in doing that, hopefully sort of helping other people to reject it. Like, I think like anything that comes out of my mouth, I feel like it needs to do something to heal the part of me that used to believe in all that, and therefore others. Like I'm honestly constantly just trying to say what I wish I'd known at 15, 16.
And it just continues. I will say, so there was a moment, I would say it was probably in July, I was pretty close to giving birth, and I can only describe what I was experiencing was sort of imposter syndrome in my own body. And I listened to your album and the lyric, "I deserve to be here," I was driving. Oh. I was like seeing at the top of my voice, I was like, I deserve to be here.
You do.
And I really, honestly, I was crying my eyes out, but I needed to hear it so much. Yeah. So when you say self-esteem is healing for me, but also it's for others too. Yeah. It truly was. It was an experience.
It makes me so, I mean, it's, happy's a weird word for saying I'm glad you cried, but I am. Like, and it makes me feel so much less lonely. And everything I'm still trying to do is for the younger me that, honestly, I don't want to swear on a nice book podcast.
Yeah, you can, it's absolutely fine.
Just all the bullshit, relentless.
Yeah.
And the fact that it sort of connects, like, all of us in the way that it does is, like, shocking, but beautiful.
Yeah, so much of The Handmaid's Tale is about the expectations placed on women, the way those pressures can become deeply internalized as well. We do it to ourselves. Do it all the time. The way women are expected to be everything all at once, whether it's obedient, desirable, pure. We're supposed to be powerful. Then you feel guilty if you have a boyfriend.
Mm, yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's not cool. Like, that's not cool. Am I anti-feminist? And we see these contradictions. They're played out in the music industry, in how others view us, how we view ourselves. Do you feel like you've got to a place where you've managed to undo that conditioning?
A bit. All of this comes in waves. I've had, like, this year I've been more sort of under the wave of my depression that can come than I have been in quite a few years, actually. And I'm unpicking it now. I'm like crawling out the other side going, what happened there then? And then the trigger certainly was like censoring myself and shutting up for others, you know, a lot of pressure on a third album, a lot of like, about 20% of the album I wasn't like totally happy with, but I thought, you know, I listened to the people high above saying it was good. So I was like, let's go, you know, things like that, like really knocked me off. So I'm still very capable of going, not taking my own advice, very much so. But on the other side, I realised recently, I had an interview actually, and it was a male journalist who was, because obviously I'm bisexual, and I have a song that says about like, don't worry if you've not got married and had children and you live in the house, you know. And he was like, are you worried that your fans are going to, you know, be upset with you if you, because I've got a nice boyfriend now and a house. Well, it's a flat. It's a 2-bed flat. It's only little. but I have got home. And if I had a baby, like what would that mean? Would I be, would I lose my fans? And I thought, shut up.
No, come on.
It's just like, not a basic reading of what I'm trying to do. And I was like, I realized, you know, it's not, the only thing I'm ever on my soapbox about is like, just let women do whatever they want.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe he was saying it. Because then I was like, oh God, first time I'd thought that. I was like, okay, so what am I going to do? Change my life and the things that feel all right for me right now, because I don't want to like upset my fans that work. Like, my fans are smarter than that. Like, yeah.
Listen, we're allowed to have a nice time. That's sort of the point at this stage. Well, on the subject of women being allowed to do whatever they want, we move on to your second bookshelfy book, which is Women Who Run With The Wolves by Clarissa Pinkola Estes. For centuries, the wild woman has been repressed by a male-orientated value system which trivialises women's emotions. Using a combination of time-honoured stories and contemporary casework, Estes reveals that the wild woman within us is innately healthy, passionate and wise, unfolding rich intercultural myths, fairy tales, folk tales and stories to help over 2 million women reconnect with this powerful inner energy. You're in excellent company because Nana Cherry also chose this book
when she came on the podcast.
Oh, she's so cool and wise.
Wow.
What made you pick this one?
It's always my, I always say it's my favourite book when I get asked what's my favourite book. In 2012, I had a particularly dreadful relationship and that meant I had to move home, real nasty bastard, you know, made me go crazy. Very, what we now know to be like narcissistic, emotionally abusive sort of thing, but again, I had no idea. So I moved back to Sheffield and then I would be going out in Sheffield and met a load of people that were at art school. And that changed everything. And they were, because I didn't go to uni, I sort of missed out on any, like all the sort of pretentious, feminism 101, wasn't sort of available to me. Not pretentious, but do you know what I mean? Like you haven't read the kind of, we're around all these art students who are all kind of amazing and smart. And one of them suggested that book to me. And God, it's just every page, like exactly like what you said, like it's like allowing that part of yourself to feel and that's not the bad bit. Like the wild person inside you, the wolf inside you is not the problem. And I had lived all of my life, like in my whole childhood was like, I cried every day because I was emotional about something every day. I was hysterical all the time because I was a hyper emotional child. Obviously my parents were like, please don't do that, which wasn't bad parenting. Like what else? I was probably very annoying. But so my whole childhood had been like, shh, you know, and I had a very sort of brother that never felt anything, never was upset. I don't remember him being upset, you know. And then my teens and my school was like that. School was really like, shut up. And then the band I was in was very like, please shut up. So I'd had, you know, three decades of feeling like the problem was my emotions.
And making yourself smaller.
Yeah. And that book is the first time I think I read about how it's physiologically natural. And gives power to that, and it's written in such a way that it's just like a given that you would have these feelings inside yourself, and it's society and the system that has sort of sold it back to you as a bad thing.
this book helped you accept the wildness inside of you, but also to realize it's okay, totally okay. Like, you're not the problem. We don't need to be tamed. Mm. What has that then led to, that realization?
It really, honestly, not became what self-esteem is about. I was still in the band at that point. I came out. I had a relationship with a woman for the first time that, like, I told my parents about, all these kind of things. Not that that's like a wild thing. I was wild. I kissed a girl. But I became myself, yeah, and stopped apologizing for it and saw the inequality in my work space, I guess. And I started making art. I was, I had my pretentious artist phase thanks to these people I met in Sheffield, which really unlocked what self-esteem was. And so all of it, all of it came from finding out that this bit that I honestly always thought one day you won't be like this, and like one day you'll grow up and you won't feel these emotions and you won't be hysterical and you won't be angry. And I let it all up be, because it is all of me. It's what we are all made up of. And I let it happen. And that turned into, what's changed my life and what is my life is all about now.
Baileys is proudly supporting the Women's Prize for Fiction by helping showcase incredible writing by remarkable women, celebrating their accomplishments and getting more of their books into the hands of more people. Baileys is the perfect adult treat, whether shaken in a cocktail, over ice cream, or paired with your favourite book. Check out baileys.com for our favourite Baileys recipes.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
In your own book, you write in fragments as well. You embrace the self as unfinished. Like you say, you're not going to grow out of this. Mm-hmm. You lean into it and you realize that that's where the richness is. How does acknowledging your own wildness in this way help you break out of identities or expectations that once felt quite fixed on you?
Yeah. Well, honestly, I've got to stop going on about him, but like I am in a nice relationship, but I actively did not want to be. There was no way I was going to be. Even like the idea that I'm like, maybe I'd have a maybe. Maybe I'd like that. That feels like a real defiant thing because it's not because there's an expectation to you at all.
Just because you want to.
You do, yeah. Yeah. I was like, and I obviously, I took it very far, my rejection of expectation. Yeah. I made a whole career out of it and a life out of it. I put it first. My whole life has been about rejecting the expectations that's put on me. And then it so weirdly meant that, like, sometimes when I, like, have a nice day and I cook a meal, I love cooking, I'll cook a meal and I'll hang out with my nice male lover and I'll watch a film and I'll go to bed with the dog, and him, he's there too, and I'll go, this is nice, and yeah. I choose this. I'm not, all my relationships with, with any gender before have been forced into this, like, but eventually we have to be monogamous and have a house and have a baby, and because what else are we doing? This one was so not that now.
That's what
reverse psychology.
Honestly, we were talking the other night. We were like, "Oh my god, we're married with a child," but and we both of us had got so okay with the idea of that never ever happening, and that was I was fine with it. In fact, I really actively embraced it that I would be single forever, and that's cool. And that's when this happened, we were like, "Oh, we are cliche."
No, I know.
But no, it's just because we like each other.
Yeah, I just put together in my head just now. I was like, that is the most radical, more radical than anything else I've done, is that, like, you know, working out with, you know, a person who's worth working things out with, you know, mad.
Yeah. But who knows what's next? And that's sort of the theme of your third book, which is All Fours by Miranda July. I'm so glad you've chosen this one. Shortlisted for the 2025 Women's Prize for Fiction, All Fours tells the story of one woman's quest for a new kind of freedom after impulsively embarking on a cross-country road trip from LA to New York without her husband and child. But 30 minutes after setting off, she spontaneously exits the freeway, beds down in a nondescript motel, and embarks on the journey of a lifetime. Now, you've described this, Rebecca, as a perfect book. What was your first reaction to All Fours when you started reading it? What drew you in?
I mean, I'm a massive Miranda July fan anyway. Yeah. I've read everything she's put out. Me, you and everyone we know, her movie, again, I saw that at like 18, and that was a big, like, that made me want to be an artist. So there's no way I'm going to open a Miranda July book and not have a good time, but I just couldn't believe how amazing it was, and it just keeps being amazing. I can't, this is really bad podcasting. It's just really
it's
amazing.
Really good.
It's just really good. But I, just the way... The storytelling, it's like gripping, and all she's doing is stopping at a motel. Like, even that is, and she decorates this room to make it exactly like that would just resonate. You know, I felt seen by that. And she has like a 20K prize to go to New York and like see things and do things with. I think it's 20K, maybe.
Yeah, I think it's 20K.
But she spends it all on decorating this one motel room. And at not one point really does the protagonist second guess that. And there was something about how I do love it. I love this in film and TV and stuff as well, where somebody is just, there's a goal and they just go to it. We don't have to go into why, or we don't have to, I hate having to watch someone like go decide whether or not they're going to do something. I just loved it. And then of course it carries on. There's so much sexual tension in it that's so graphic without and so realistic. I love anything like that. I love like weird sexy bits in books.
Oh, it's so weird and sexy. Like, me and my friends all read it at the same time on holiday, and we're all sitting going, you're reading
heaven.
What I'm reading.
Yeah. The amount of people I have bought it for, like the amount. And also, like, I love to read a book about a mad woman feeling crazy.
Yes.
But the character is, you know, she's 40 something, relatively like got all the things that, you know, my previous expectations were the right, you know, settled, done. Even she's like that. She's like, it's, and her, this just impetus to just like throw a bomb in it. And it just felt so unusual. Like, we don't really see it. There's like Shirley Valentine,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah.
And then, and this one is done, I don't know, there's just something really fair enough about it. And then, yeah, the bit, the sexy bits and the way, there's an element of like, I'm going to do this before it's too late, because physiologically the menopause is coming for her, right? And that's something I haven't even started to consider and probably need to, you know, and I just thought it was brilliant writing. brilliant writing.
There's this refusal, and I love it, this refusal to sanitize womanhood, whether it's sex or aging or madness or yearning. And Miranda July's writing is often described as sort of seductive, a little odd, emotionally raw. Has reading All Fours changed or developed the way you think about these sort of deeply human, often taboo themes? You mentioned the menopause there. Does it change the way you apply these themes in your work or just live your life?
Yeah, I mean, it really did. It's almost like things become trendy, right? So like a few years ago, self-esteem, it was like, oh, it's feminist pop in a way we've not heard it before. And then you sort of, now I think we hear a lot of it. And then, not that I made it up, but like it starts to be in culturally, we start to be able to talk about like the Me Too movement, right? Then gave us a chance to say to a builder when he catcalls us, no.
Yeah.
You know, I joke a lot. I was like, you can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
Like, it's not the good old days, you know? So we get, it becomes part of mainstream culture. And menopause is not part of mainstream culture, I don't think. It's still this, it's used as a joke. It's like a comedy thing about women sweating. Yeah.
Which all of these things were before we used to talk about periods, for example.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think things have changed a little bit. But
it's really incremental. But when I get very upset about everything and hopeless, I remember that even in my lifetime, there's a marked difference between the way men would be able to speak to me. When I think about when I was in the band and the way people spoke to me, that wouldn't happen anymore. That is progress. Like, so the menopause, yeah, I it's made me quite excited to, because I'm 40 next year, right? So like trying to be a pop star who's only just getting going in their career at 40 and a woman, you know, like people say, look at Sia, and Sia won't let her face be shown.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like they literally got a child to replicate her. Like there are examples of women that do stay visible, but it's a battle to look as young as possible. And this book is the sort of grains, the seeds of something I need, which is like to be able to boldly and confidently talk about my life and the next 20 years and whatever the hell that's going to be like. And it can still be sexy and relatable and exciting and raw and not just, I just feel like women have had to just shut up. Like, the fact I don't know much about the menopause is crazy. You know, my mum just head down and gone on with it. Like, mad.
Aging as a woman in the public eye is wild.
I mean,
especially as a pop star. I think there's one of the notes in your book actually where you've put too old for Radio 1, which, listen.
You did me a solid. You helped me out there. You played me.
Made you my tune of the week several times.
I was like, my sister, thank you so much.
But it's a hugely confronting thing as well, because you look at yourself, don't you? You've talked about having recently frozen your eggs to give yourself a bit more time as well. Do you think we all need to be a bit more open as women? Actually, I feel bad about even asking this, because why is it on us? We need to be more open each other.
Yeah, I think so. I think, like, there's a version of the next bit of my career where I try and look younger and I, you know, put music out that doesn't talk about how my body is changing or my life. Or there's a version where I carry on doing what I'm doing, which is very sort of confessional. It feels like, I mean, we'll see. It might flop, but the it's important. It feels like extremely important for me to not start hiding, and everyone. It's important for everyone. I mean, I've got a tiny little bit of a audience that if I suddenly became a bigger deal all over the world, and you know, I looked different and I had access to all the things to make me look younger and cooler, that would feel like a massive betrayal. So yeah, it feels not on, that's on me personally, but I think across all media, like, please just like let us see it more, let us see women more that aren't even still the age gaps of relationships in every film. Like, I get, like, because I'm doing acting stuff now, I get tapes for I'm mum, at least mum, like my Levi in my band, who's the most like stunningly beautiful, tiny, unbelievable model-esque thing, gets like mate, because she's like even we're still casting, like the lead woman is the most exquisitely beautiful, slim, young,
very very
thing
young
ever.
Yeah,
that's still, and we all accept it. I'd love to see something where it's like a 45-year-old woman is the gorgeous, you know, thing, object of desire. So yeah, oh God, I'm really ranting. But yeah,
it's not up to us.
It's not up to us, but I think it's, I guess what I'm trying to say is like, there is a part of me, the part of me that wants to be like as sort of big and famous and rich and successful as possible, knows that it's bad business for me to boldly now talk about the next 20 years of my life. But it's a, even if the devil said, here, you could look 28 and you can suddenly be considered a huge global contemporary cool artist, I don't think I do it. Mm. I can't. I don't matter. I've got to do it because I can't not.
Do want to mention actually, Miranda July is this incredible multidisciplinary artist. You mentioned that she's a film director as well as an author, screenwriter, actress, live performance artist, as is the protagonist of All Fours. As a very multifaceted, multi-talented creative yourself, and if anyone hasn't seen a self-esteem show, like just so good. It's so engrossing, so exciting. And also you get so creative with all the different facets of it. Shout out to the Meadow Hall boobs, bless and re. Being able to flex all those muscles, being older, being wiser, it's an asset.
Yeah, surely.
Yes.
That's the thing. There's this, because I've made music as my full-time career since I was 18, you know, I realized recently there has been there's a clock in the artwork of Complicated Woman, because I have subconsciously had this timer that's going to stop. Like and we are almost out of time on my music career. So what used to be this like, building blocks towards, you know, what will be a headlining Glastonbury level career. It takes, you know, a decade to be an artist big enough to do that. Suddenly, like over the last 2 years, I was like, it suddenly feels impossible. It suddenly feels extremely unlikely. And I couldn't, again, it's naive and stupid, but I couldn't work out what it was until, I don't know, some thinking. I was like, it's because I feel like my life's about to be over. That's how severe it is. No one is telling me this. No label executive has said, uh-oh, but you just feel it. I feel it culturally. I feel it from, you know, we got feedback. My fan base is too old for Radio 1.
Is that what they said?
That's the feedback I was given. And I was like, but that's why the younger girlies need to hear this though.
Yeah,
so like,
yeah, exactly.
I've just absorbed it and believed it. And that's why I'm like, been a rough year going, well, this is it then, this is the end. And obviously now you're live on your podcast, I'm working out that it can't be,
it shouldn't be
and it can't be. But I figured it out when I watched the Blur documentary. That was when I found out, because I watched the Blur documentary, I thought, they look so fucking cool. Damon Albarn is so cool. It still seems like the most relevant thing in the world. And I was like, can you imagine four women at the same age? Also, they're just like drinking booze and smoking fags all the way through. And I was like, imagine four women smoking fags on a documentary. They wouldn't look cool. They'd be like, oh God, they shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah.
There is just like unbelievable amounts of...
it's a double standard.
Completely. The perception of an older woman. I know we know this. I know it's been in the zeitgeist for a bit about like, you know, women not being allowed to age or whatever. But I don't think we've dug in enough about how bad that is and how much it sort of, it feels like it's like shortened my life. Like, I feel like now I've got to go away and not be perceived visually.
Please don't do that.
I won't. Please, I can't. But isn't it mad?
It's absolutely mad. It hits you like a ton of bricks.
Yeah.
Well, we're not doing that right now. No. But right now, we're gonna leave that thought there,
right?
And we're gonna move on, because I don't want you to go away.
No,
let's talk about your fourth bookshelfy book, Rebecca, which is Hunchback by Sao Ichikawa, translated by Polly Barton. Born with a congenital muscle disorder, Shaka Isawa lives most of her life online from the limits of her care home. She studies, tweets, and posts outrageous stories on an erotica website, One day, a new male carer reveals he's read it all. Her response? An indecent proposal, written by the first disabled author to win Japan's most prestigious literary award and acclaimed instantly as one of the most important Japanese novels of the 21st century. Hunchback is a subversive and unflinching look at disability, ableism, and sexuality, prompting questions about consent, desire, and the human need for autonomy. Tell us why you've chosen this as one of your choices today.
It's short, it's really short. And I bought it on this last tour. And it's really sexy, but in a really like sort of medical way. Again, it's like sex that's not sanitized, which I enjoyed. It's almost like, is it 4D or meta? Like she discusses how the character can't hold a book to read it because of her disability and has a book scanner. And you're sort of reading it, holding it, realizing the privilege of that. Like, it's incredible. It's incredible how she writes and makes her point without sort of bashing you over the head and sort of telling you you're bad kind of thing. Like, it's so, so clever and made me think so much about the privilege I have, and the character is so defiant. She's like a hero, but I don't want to spoil it. But she's confident and like holds the power, I think, in the whole book. Yeah, I just thought it was amazing. It's beautiful. I'm like waiting on all her other stuff to come to the flat.
You describe the way she writes, and I know you said in your notes that you can sort of smell and feel, and you physically experience this book, which I know is a dream when you're creating shows as well. How did this book spark or shape that vision?
It really inspired me, and I enjoyed it. Every time I read something or watch something that is like, you can smell it, whether you want to or not, it just reminds me how important it is to make my work like that. It's not sanitizing. And another thing I think women have to do more than men, but making an audience comfortable doesn't have to be the MO. Like, I loved it.
When it comes to not sanitizing these subjects and themes, it's also a book where it refuses to turn into a love story or have that happy ending love story kind of thing going on that we're so used to.
Yeah.
And that sort of plays into not necessarily making or having your MO to be making your audience comfortable. In your own work, how do you navigate the pressure to resolve things really neatly?
Yeah. I think mostly because I haven't. I don't. I always have one foot in a puddle. What? And the puddle is
I love it.
One foot is always in, like, but I don't know though, really.
Yes.
So, as preachy as I can get, and it's like, don't do this, do that, or like, but that could change. I did a Q&A at the South Bank Centre, like 2,000 people about my book with Dolly Alderton. And there was a Q&A section at the end, and the amount of times I just answered, I don't know. It's like, and the book says an oracle on the front. But I think it's really important to allow yourself to change or evolve your opinions, find out something new and therefore change. And also, as someone who's grown up with this, again, I had this stop clock that's stopping in terms of my career, and I have a very, even the idea of a relationship that's always felt rigid and something I won't be able to do, therefore something I couldn't do. And there is always this idea that eventually I won't feel bad anymore and everything will be sorted and fine. And it's so not true. I mean, almost every song I write says something about there being another hill at the bottom of the top of the next hill you find. I'm like, I must come up with a new one for that. But it's important to mainly to remind myself all the time, because to tie things up neatly, it gives it, again, it's a betrayal, because that's not what life is.
I know When I Do This All The Time came out, and there was all this chat around it being the sort of modern wear sunscreen.
Yeah, at the moment.
But it's true. It's like, do this or don't, whatever. it's up to you, and I don't know, but that's life.
Yeah, yeah. I think we've been fed, I certainly, the system and society fed me a pretty clear idea of what I should be like. And so I, all my work, I think, is just sort of try to readdress the balance of that. But that doesn't mean that you're... I think when I was younger, like, my mates getting married when we were, like, 30, and I used to be a bit like... Because I ultimately just was so sad that won't be my life, I guess. I was like, I'm realising now, like, my disdain for things is only based in a fear. What was only based in fear and sort of immaturity. I really can't stress enough how much I just think everyone should just do whatever they want. And I, this is probably me on podcast 5 years ago being like, about people's life choices. And I learned, you know, I've eaten some humble pie, and I think everyone should be open to that pie.
I think so. I recently realized everyone's just insane, just yeah. going about their insane lives, yeah. justifying it however they need to.
Yeah.
Do you, hon?
That's why I'm immune to the people go like, I can't go on Instagram because everyone's showing me their perfect lives. And I'm like, yeah, but we all know it's not. So.
Yeah, we know, it's okay. So it's okay.
Let someone post the, you know, the, that, whatever
thing. We don't
have
to caveat joy with misery every
no,
time.
I know.
Do you know?
Yeah, yeah.
As I said before, trying to have a nice time.
Yes.
Oh, I've been having a very nice time, actually. And I'm on to your fifth and final book now. I know we've arrived. At Milk Fed.
Oh, yes.
By Melissa Broder. Rachel is a 24-year-old lapsed Jew who has made calorie restriction her religion. By day, she maintains an illusion of control by way of obsessive food rituals. At night, she pedals nowhere on the elliptical machine. Then Rachel meets Miriam, a young Orthodox Jewish woman intent upon feeding her, pairing superlative emotional insight with unabashed, vivid fantasy. Melissa Broder tells a tale of appetites, of physical hunger, of sexual desire, of spiritual longing. Milkfed is a tender and riotously funny meditation on love, certitude, and the question of what we are all being fed. Now, this is a book that you say you always recommend to people. What makes it so recommendable?
I just got goosebumps. It's so good. Again, it's a few things. One is it's just written really, really well, and it's like you turn the page because you really want to know what's happening, which is an overlooked thing. You know, it's still important when you're reading a book to make it like that. Also, she's relatable, insanely relatable in the same way a Miranda July book is, or it's written with a sort of you're in on it with her feeling. And I've had to sort of watch who I recommend it to, but I do, because me and my sort of peers, I don't know any women that haven't had some form of problems with food. And the way it's written, I've never read anything about eating disorders that's like that. And it's not sort of sensational and devastating and tragic. It's very she's living it, and it's not, that's her life, and you're sort of sad for her, but it also feels very sustainable. And that's my experience with any time I've had a disordered eating phase. Like, the sort of thrill I get from the fact I've made it sustainable is really dark, you know, and to read someone else write like that. I don't know. I'm not making great sentences, but like, it was like a relief in a way to see it like that. And the fact that her sort of return to her escape from doing that comes in this form of, she falls in love with this woman who doesn't regulate her eating and does enjoy life and does enjoy food. And, she's down bad for her. Like, she thinks, you know, she can't believe how gorgeous she is. And it was just, it's a lovely romantic bit of the book that sort of this woman teaches her how to live, really. And it's so good. It's really good book, but it is so moving and relatable in this, like, restriction. Her mum's really overbearing. There's a lot of restriction from her mum. She casts things off by the power of, yeah, food and letting that in. And I just think it's a really good, empowering book.
You've said that you related to the protagonist in a way that felt almost uncomfortably close. And Milkfed navigates desire, shame, eating, queerness without flinching. Sort of ends in this queer awakening as well, which you described as one of your favourite themes. Did this novel help you think about how the roles of daughter, partner, mother, you know, which you explore in your book, how those roles interact with desire and the parts of ourselves that we sometimes hide?
Yeah. I think it's back to expectation, isn't it, really? Like, the sort of expectation and the performance of being this a woman in the way that you're meant to be. She just, there is a version of her that her mother expects her to be, that society expects her to be. Society expects her to be thin. But honestly, the character that she meets, she works in an ice cream shop. It's so, the way it's written, the way she writes about food, when she starts to eat in this book, it's the most delicious thing in the world. The way she writes about it, you can taste it and feel it. I love a protagonist discarding expectation and it being a very good thing for them. This is a really good sort of fable of that, I think.
I think a protagonist discarding expectation is sort of young Becky in a complicated woman. I love that for you.
Yeah, you can see me, but like there's notes from like 2015 where you can
when
tell
you take it right back.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, hang on a minute. She's starting to think there.
Yeah. You can see where these things, and actually a lot of the themes that are explored in the books that we've discussed today, when that penny starts to drop, like you said, right from A Handmaid's Tale, it's like the varying stages of that dropping penny. You see it throughout the book.
God, you're right. Like almost every book has just got a woman realizing something and then acting on it, whether it's that's easy to do or not. None of them act on their sort of awakening, and it's simple and easy. Every character in all of those books are brave. I suppose that's what I'm always banging on about.
There'll be realizations and awakenings every day. They just keep coming. So I do want to ask, what's next? I know you're taking a little bit of time for yourself because it's been an insane year.
Yeah. I really tried for it not to be, but it has.
Well, this is what happens. Well, will you write another book? You sort of mentioned that you've got ideas.
I've got an idea. Yeah. I've got an idea. I would need a long deadline and a big check.
Maybe no deadline, but still the check.
But I would like to do that. It's quite fun. I'm now like looking at on the edge of acting, writing or music, and all three of them aren't, it used to be impossible to get anyone to listen to me or like help me or fund it. And now all three, there are places I can go with ideas and say, this is what I think it should be and this is what I want to do. And I'm really trying to just enjoy that moment really and make sure whatever I do next isn't born out of pressure or expectation and make sure it's good. So I'm sort of going to sit. I'm doing a play from March to June next year called Teeth and Smiles, which is a David Hare play. Yeah. So that'll be interesting because it's cabaret. I went into a role that was very much set. It's a revival. So I'm sort of finding the character from scratch, which is really exciting. I'll be playing some festivals. And then, whatever comes next will be whatever I think is good enough. I don't want to rush anything.
I think that's the best way of doing it. I will ask you to rush one thing, though, and that is my final question, which is, if you had to pick one book as a favourite, which would it be and why? I know, I'm
out
sorry.
Out of all them?
Yeah, out of those five.
All fours, I think.
Yeah.
I just think I could read it again and again and again. I just think it's gorgeous and brilliant. And I'm grateful to her for writing it.
Rebecca Lucy Taylor, it has been such a pleasure.
We could just not have microphones here.
I was going to say, Rebecca bought me a bottle of wine. No guest has ever brought me, well, anything, but a bottle of wine.
Well, you know what it was? I was like, I want to take something for the baby. And I thought, no, I'm going to take something for you.
I thought you were going to say, it's actually for the baby, not you.
I thought, how often do you get baby gifts? And I thought, but then I was worried you didn't drink. So no, I did Google it. Google says that you have said you drink alcohol, but less so recently due to hangovers.
Did Google say that?
That's what like AI Google
said. Wow. When did I say that?
Mine would probably say yes. Full stop. But yes, please enjoy that nice light rosé.
Thank you for the bottle of wine. And thank you even more for being a guest on Bookshelfie. It has been incredible.
Oh, thank
I love you.
I love you. Anything for Vic Hope. You heard it here first.
I'm Vic Hope, and you've been listening to the Women's Prize for Fiction Bookshelfie podcast, brought to you by Baileys and produced by Birdline Media. Thank you for joining me for this episode. You'll find all the books discussed in our show notes. If you've enjoyed it, please leave us a rating or review to help other readers discover even more brilliant books by women. See you next time.
I always had a private doctor. I didn't think I needed VA care. Then I learned VA is ranked above private care systems nearby and costs less. I'm getting the best care of my life with providers trained to treat veterans. Get what you earn. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for the type or amount of benefits mentioned here.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner. So you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.